Thank you, Ms. Backenhoff. All right, so I've got 9:32 called order. Ms. Mouse, would you take roll for us?
Yes. Mr. Chair, we have Dr. Stenhoff.
Here.
Dr. David Wilson.
Present.
Dr. Davey.
Here.
Ms. Denton.
Present.
And Dr. Raitt.
Here.
We have a quorum.
All right. Thanks, Ms. Malice. And we, as my fellow committee members may have recognized, we've set a new record of applications that we're reviewing in a month. So nice going, everybody, for doing that. Board staff, there's so much work that you all do that we have no idea what you do behind the scenes, but I really appreciate the efforts that you guys make and how quickly you respond to our questions. And Ms. Galvin, for your ongoing advice is much appreciated. So thank you. One other point regarding continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification. And this is for BACB certification only, just to clarify. The Board of Psychologist Examiners is approved by the BACB as an ACE continuing education provider. Attending a meeting of the Board's Committee on Behavior Analysts is eligible for continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification. To claim this credit, make note of the code words provided hourly throughout the meeting. To report the code words to board staff for purposes of earning continuing education credit, look for the link on the board's meetings page for this particular meeting. So, okay, let's move on to the next agenda item, approval of the minutes for August 26th. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Can I have a second?
Second.
Quiet your band.
Okay, any discussion? All right, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right, next agenda item. This discussion consideration, possible action regarding license reinstatement requests and recommendation to the board. The first we'll review is Mikkel Reed. Dr. Raitt's here the lead on that, and I understand Dr. Davis Wilson is recused from this. With that, Dr. Raitt, would you summarize this for us?
Yes. So we did receive this reinstatement application for Ms. Reed. And after receiving the application, we have since received some additional information regarding a potential complaint. This has not been brought to a meeting yet. So we, in reviewing everything, my recommendation to this committee and moving forward would be to hold off on making any decisions until we are able to review the additional information that has come in the last month, and then make a decision for both when that comes through.
All right.
Would the committee care to receive legal advice on this issue?
Yes, please.
Sure. Yes, please.
Is that a motion?
I make a motion that we move for legal advice.
I will second that.
We have 3 seconds, so I'd say it. All in favor of going to executive session for legal advice, say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. Discussion?
Yeah, so as we discussed regarding this reinstatement and upon counsel, at this point, I think my recommendation would be to reinstate the license, noting that there will be a future agenda item regarding the complaint as well as the self-disclosure of practice during the time with which the license had lapsed. And that would be the recommendation to the board. And I open it up to my colleagues for further discussion or thoughts.
Other comments, committee members? Okay, then do we have a motion?
I will make the motion.
Okay, all right. And then do I have a second?
I will second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. And I do note that Ms. Reed is on the call. Ms. Reed, do you have any further comments for this? Or?
No, thank you.
Okay, all right.
Mr. Chairman, just to clarify, this recommendation by the committee will be reviewed by the board at its meeting next Friday, October 7th. So I will send Ms. Reed the information to participate.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. Okay, next agenda, another license reinstatement request from Nadia Todd. Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Todd had become originally licensed on June 23rd of 2021. Her license expired on August 31st of 2022, so less than a year. Her renewal request was submitted on 9/16, so September 16th, within that time frame for those renewal reinstatement fees to come into play there. So, you know, that's not necessarily concerning at this point. You know, I don't see any reason why it should not be reinstated. She has all of her CEUs to meet those prorated CE requirements. Looking through this, I would say it's relevant to note that there was a period from September 1st to September 9th where there was practice of behavior analysis without an active license. So that's likely something that will need to be discussed at a future meeting. But at this point in time, in terms of reinstatement, I would make the recommendation to the board for reinstatement of this license.
Any comments from committee members? Okay.
Then, you could take that motion first and then consider whether you want to open up a complaint with respect to practicing without a license for that period of time.
Okay. All right. So do we have a motion for reinstatement?
So moved. Okay.
All right. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. And then is Ms. Galvin brought up, do we want to have a discussion about the practicing for those days without license?
I definitely would like to have a discussion with my fellow committee members. You know, as we are looking at this, you know, I did scour our statutes to see if there was some sort of grace period, to see if, you know, 8 days made any difference as opposed to 365 days. And ultimately at this point there, I do not see any grace period that allows for someone to practice behavior analysis in the state of Arizona without an active license. So given this, I'm struggling to not see things in a very black and white fashion. I would ask for my other fellow committee members' take on that. Anyone?
Mr. Chair, is this an opportunity to add this to a future agenda, where we would discuss whether or not we would be opening a complaint?
You may.
All right. Other comments on that suggestion?
I would like to turn that into a motion.
Okay. So, Ms. Denton, is that your motion then?
That's my motion. So okay. Moved.
I'll second. All right.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 I said there was no further discussion, Mr. Chair, but I'm going to add something.
Yeah, yes, you may.
Yeah, okay. I saw that Ms. Todd was on the call at some point, and I do think that it is admirable to disclose the information that was disclosed, to be straightforward and forthcoming about, you know, dates and times and that and all of that piece. So I do believe that's admirable of Ms. Todd.
Yes, I agree. Ms. Todd, we do appreciate you attending. Thank you.
Yes, I'm on the call. Yeah, I would also just wanted to add that I did my due diligence and sent letters to all my RBTs that I did provide that supervision for when I wasn't licensed, and just let them know that I wasn't licensed at that time so that they can't, you know, count those hours towards any supervision. So I did send them letters just to inform them of that. And that I wasn't aware at the time that my license was expired. But as soon as I was aware, I let my director know, and she took over my cases, and I stopped providing services. So I just wanted to note that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I think at the time we had a unanimous vote to table that and have it for further discussion. So we'll move on to the next agenda item. Next is possible action regarding self-reports submitted by Joel Mattiella and recommendation to the board. I do want to note that I was employed at the same agency as Mr. Mattiella, but I have not had any contact with him since 2017 and feel that I can review this without any bias.
Mr. Chair, also that at some point during my career, Joel Mattiella and I myself worked at the same agency. I was never a direct supervisor and have not had contact with him probably since around that same period of 2017. And I feel as if I can adjudicate this matter in a clear way. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. Ms. Michelson, do you want to have a discussion about
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'll provide a brief summary of this matter to the committee. Mr. Mattiella was issued his behavior analyst license by the board in 2020. On July 25th of 2022, the licensee submitted a self-report to board staff indicating that he had been charged with a DUI in Colorado following an arrest on July 20th. He reported the criminal charge to the board within the time frame required by statute. Subsequently, he did supply all documentation that was requested by staff to include a statement regarding the incident and all police and court records in this matter. The police report indicated that an officer with the Durango Police Department responded to a call regarding a bottomed out vehicle over an embankment with the front end tilted down and the back wheels in the air blocking a sidewalk. The licensee was outside the vehicle in the company of another officer and was observed swaying front to back while standing. He admitted to the officer having consumed alcohol nearly 6 hours prior to this event. He stated to the officer that he did not understand why his vehicle would not move and appeared to not understand that his car was lodged on the embankment. In doing so, the officer detected a slur in his speech and detected an odor of an alcoholic beverage. He refused to provide a chemical sample and was subsequently transported to the county jail. During booking, he did submit to a breath sample, a preliminary breath test, which yielded a breath alcohol content measurement of 0.142%. On September 5th, the licensee reported to board staff the terms of his plea deal, resulting in a deferred judgment with the La Plata County Court. The sentence order that he provided, dated August 30th of 2022, reflects that he pleaded guilty to DUI and is granted a deferred judgment based on completion of the following terms. Those terms include 15 months of unsupervised probation, payment of a $750 fee, which he provided documentation reflecting that was paid already, attendance of a victim impact panel. He also provided documentation to reflect that was completed on September 1st, 48 hours of community service, which he just supplied documentation to me yesterday, reflecting that he has enrolled with the city of Tempe and intends to start the community service this weekend. Additionally, he's required to submit to a substance abuse evaluation and adhere to his treatment's recommendations, which he has reported that is scheduled for October 24th. One additional term in the sentence order is that he's not permitted to drive in the state of Colorado for 12 months. I do want to note that with respect to a previous criminal history, the licensee did disclose on his licensure application a 2010 conviction for possession of marijuana and a 2017 conviction for disorderly conduct. This concludes my summary. Please let me know if there are any questions. I do see that we have a licensee here today, so the committee may wish to hear from him as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Paxton. Mr. Mattiella, is there any discussion you'd like to have at this time, or?
I just want to say that the occurrence in July 20th in Colorado, it's irresponsible, embarrassing, and inexcusable. This did not involve any client safety, ABA services, or any other individuals and myself. I chose to be upfront and honest so that I can continue to move forward. I hope to reapply for Arizona licensure in the spring of next year, and I wanted to avoid any complications with that. I'm taking all the necessary steps to move forward. I have done the steps that Ms. Mixon had just mentioned, and if I can meet these sentence requirements in 15 months of my court date, these charges will be dismissed.
Great, thank you. Do any committee members have any questions for Mr. Mattiella? Any discussion at this time?
No, I think the discussion is just simply that, the information is brought forward to us in a timely fashion, which, it appears that we've got the information. We're not finding out about it on an application. The licensee, has acknowledged that it's an embarrassment to himself and has provided us with, kind of what the court has asked of him and his adherence to those guidelines. I think as long as the adherence to the guidelines from the state of Colorado were followed, and that those are essentially followed to a T when licensure comes up, then I don't have any real concerns about the situation. The one pause I have in my head is this kind of like flare, these flare up every 4 or 5 years, that, at some point that becomes somewhat of a pattern. And so that, the licensee needs to realize that, but we take these matters seriously. We also look at that pattern and, may have further discussion with him come the license time.
Dr. Davey, any other comments? Okay. Do we have a motion?
Do we actually need a motion on this, Ms. Galvin?
If you, the committee, wishes to make a recommendation to the board, but that no action be taken, then that type of motion would be appropriate. The fact that some sort of motion is necessary because you've been presented this information, we want to kind of close the loop.
Fair enough. But I'll move that we move this forward to the board for there to be no action at this time.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All right. Any further discussion?
The only discussion piece is that I would like the licensee to inform the board staff when all of the outlined areas by the state of Colorado have been completed.
Can we revise that motion then, the initial motion then, Dr. Davey, to add that on there?
Of course. A friendly amendment to myself. I'll amend myself.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. Do I have a second for Dr. Davey's self-amended motion?
I will second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? OK, Okay, motion carries. Mr. Mafiello, thank you for coming here and talking to us through this. Appreciate it. So, thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, if I may add, I will be notifying him by email as well that the board will review his recommendation next Friday. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay, next item is consideration possible action regarding complaints and recommendation to board. Our first or only complaint is number 22-38, Emily Orn. Dr. Rates is recused from this item. Dr. Davey, you're the lead on that. I did want to discuss a few things before you do get started. Want to note, a person or representative of a person who has filed or is the subject of complaint and is present today may make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by me. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statement. Only individuals involved directly in the complaint, which the complainant and respondent may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure that your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter the meeting. Please only use initials for patients or children and the complainant. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. The committee may go to executive session to discuss any confidential records or to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Jean Galvin. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon parties present and request to speak. Again, there's only one complaint today, 22-38 against Ms. Emily Orn. Before we proceed, I've already listed out the recusal, so Dr. Rates. Dr. Davey, you're the lead on this committee. It's the lead committee member for this complaint. Will you please provide the committee with an overview of the case?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to complaint 22-38, Complain LS had previously worked at SARC as a behavior therapist from May 2021 through June of 2022. She was directly supervised by Ms. Orn, who is the licensee that the complaint has been filed against that we are hearing today. There's much information that's provided in the investigative report that I trust the committee has gone through. I'll highlight some of the more salient dates and points. But on May 3rd, 2022, LS was issued a performance improvement plan. That plan is available in your documents as well. Regarding unprofessional communications with staff, attempts to communicate with team members outside of business hours, and not for implementing instructional programs according to protocol. That was on May 3rd, and then approximately 1 month later, June 2nd, LS was subsequently terminated by SARC. Approximately 3 weeks following her termination, LS filed a complaint against Ms. Orn, alleging that she was in fact unprofessional during her interactions and that there had been no boundary issues, or that there had been no boundaries as a supervisor and some boundary issues, failed to create a safe environment for LS, and was in fact biased against LS. LS sent a communication to Ms. Orn following her submission of the complaint, including an email that was sent on July 5th, so 3 days after termination, which states to forget everything that she had previously wrote in past emails to us. That included her an attempt to retract the complaint we have here today. In a written response, Ms. Orn denies these allegations. Ms. Orn does not believe that any of her actions were unprofessional, nor did she fail to create a safe environment for LS or treat LS with respect. Also, the interactions were with LS were within professional boundaries. She further comments that LS was placed on a PIP because she was not responding to other mechanisms for feedback or coaching, and that she was not being singled out. The complaint goes on to some other specifics around Ms. Orn being slightly unprofessional, That there were text messages that were occurring outside of business hours, that there was some mention of unethical behavior linked to BACB ethical guidelines. While no guideline was outlined, the areas that LS listed were failed to create a safe environment for LS, not maintaining boundaries, not treating LS with respect, failing to follow through on a performance intervention plan, demonstrated a bias against LS. Further, LS goes on to state that she cannot receive her BCBA hours when she was placed on the PIP. That led to a loss of income. Also left her with difficulty finding a new job due to her RBT certification not being renewed in a timely fashion. There's other materials that are provided to the committee, text messages back and forth. I've reviewed those, just that the other committee members have as well. The licensee's response is as follows. We have the licensee stating that there were some professional boundary issues early on with LS that are noted in the records provided. It goes on to discuss the fact that there were other supervisors that had similar issues with LS with regard to her performance, with regard to her own personal boundaries. There's further documentation in here that the PIP was developed in concert with the licensee supervisor as well as HR professionals. Further, that there are licensee further states that they do not believe that she crossed any professional boundaries, that she continued to provide support to LS even during the PIP process. And I think that for my part, that's pretty much where I'll stop with a summary. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. Is the complainant LS present? All right, so we'll move on. Ms. Orn, I noted you're on the call today. Would you please unmute yourself, state your full name for the record? Your attorney may also state their name for the record, and then you and your attorney have the opportunity to make a brief statement to the committee at this time, up to 5 minutes. The committee may have questions for you following the statement.
Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff. My name is Emily Orn.
Chairman Stenhoff and Vice Chairman Davey, my name is Claudia Stedman. I am counsel for Emily Orn.
Thank you. And you both go ahead and make your statements at this time if you choose to.
Thank you, Dr. Stenhoff and members of the committee. My name is Emily Orn, and I am a board certified behavior analyst. I obtained certification as a behavior analyst in 2019 and have been licensed by the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners since January 2020. I have worked in my current role as a clinical supervisor at SARC since December 2019. In this role, I provide supervision to the behavior therapists on my team, which includes RBT supervision as well as supervision to individuals currently enrolled in behavior analytic coursework that are accumulating supervised fieldwork hours. From November 2021 to June 2022, I was LS's direct supervisor. LS was a behavior therapist at SARC. Throughout LS's time as a behavior therapist, she engaged in frequent communication with other behavior therapists and supervisors, which often pertained to non-clinical topics using agency communication modalities. Due to concerns about excessive social communication to others interfering with delivery of services to clients, direct feedback and counseling was given to LS to provide clarity on expectations for service delivery, communication expectations, and boundaries between supervisors and supervisees. Unfortunately, LS did not respond to this direct feedback and counseling. Because the frequency of her communication and the topics with which LS was communicating about while using SARC modalities did not improve, I requested support from my own supervisors to set clear expectations for LS. Following SARC's clinical policies and procedures for disciplinary actions, LS was placed on a performance improvement plan because she was not responding to other mechanisms of feedback or coaching. Throughout this process, we repeatedly tried to work with LS to help her achieve the goals of her performance improvement plan, but each time I or other supervisors attempted to offer feedback or begin a dialogue, LS would become non-responsive, defensive, try to change the topic, or engage in other overt emotional behaviors. In her complaint, LS states that our working relationship became unprofessional and claims that it violates the BACB ethics code. It is difficult for me to respond to this allegation as LS has not identified the particular BACB ethics code provision that she claims I have violated. LS alleges that our working relationship became unprofessional as the nature of the conversation started to become personal. As articulated in my narrative response to the board, I am confident that the relationship between myself and LS at no point became personal to a degree that crossed professional or ethical boundaries. I feel that I maintained professional obligations as outlined by the ethics code for behavior analysts. Not only do I feel that my conduct is supported by the BACB ethics code, but the way in which I attempted to support, correct, and mentor LS while I was her supervisor was supported by other supervisors and SARC's policies. To the extent that any of our conversations broached personal topics, it was out of concern for LS's mental health and well-being or in an attempt to provide feedback and offer support. In her complaint, LS implies that she was singled out and targeted for minor mistakes, which ultimately led to her termination. However, this allegation is untrue. We repeatedly explained to LS the details of employees' performance feedback is confidential, so it would be unfair to assume others are not receiving the same corrective feedback. Additionally, LS was given many opportunities to take in and improve upon the feedback that was being provided to her. Unfortunately, LS seemed completely unwilling to accept any constructive criticism. Because there was no indication that she would meet any of the requirements of her performance improvement plan, LS was terminated. This was not a decision that I made unilaterally. I regret that the termination of LS's employment resulted in the loss of income, insurance, and had a negative impact on her mental and emotional well-being. However, the decision to put LS on a PIP and ultimately to terminate LS were made by SARC as an organization based on a body of evidence. The decision to terminate LS was not one which was taken lightly. Multiple supervisors were involved in this process, and each person involved considered all avenues of how to help LS and coach her before determining that LS needed to be terminated. I do not believe that my actions were unprofessional, that I failed to create a safe environment for LS, or that I failed to treat LS with respect. I appreciate the committee's time in reviewing this matter, and I am available to answer any questions you may have.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Horn. Ms. Stedman, do you have any further comments?
Not at this time, but if it's okay with the committee, I may reserve at the end.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so the committee will now begin. Let's stop here. Does anybody at this time have any questions for Ms. Horn or counsel?
Mr. Chair, I just had a few questions that I would just like Ms. Horn to articulate for us. One is around the idea that she could not she was not able to receive BCBA hours when she was placed on a PIP. Is that an accurate statement there that's paused while someone's in a performance improvement plan?
Yes, according to SARC's policies and the disciplinary actions and procedures, a employee is not allowed to accrue their supervised fieldwork hours. However, they are able to continue working and providing services to clients and continuing to make their regular salary.
Fair enough. So it's really around the hours or the experiences that if the PIP is tied to failure to be able to kind of achieve a certain bar, a PIP is put in place. And so those, the accrual of hours is paused during that period.
Correct.
Then my follow-up question to that is around the RBT certification piece that she makes a statement. I mean, obviously, you were likely linked to her as her supervisor or your supervisor, or if you have an agency supervisor was linked. Was there any shortcomings there on your part or on the agency's part to get that done in a timely fashion?
No, when her RBT certification expired, it was after the time that I was her supervisor.
Thank you. And then I had one other, actually, I believe that was the end of my questions for you. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Any other questions from committee members? Okay. The committee will now begin their deliberation. Please note that deliberation is the time for committee members to discuss the case among themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. Dr. Davies, since you're the lead on this case, will you please begin the discussion?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's, first off, thank Ms. Oren for being here today and providing us with the information as well as her thorough response to the complaint. My overall statements are as follows. I don't see that there is anything here that even gets close to a violation of statute or rule, whether it be from BACB Ethics Code or from the state of Arizona. I do not see anything here that gives me pause with regard to the interactions between the licensee, SARC's support staff, and the complainant. In looking at things, it appears that the interactions were on the up and up, were trying to be supportive to an individual that was struggling perhaps with her the expectations around her employment and her job. That is documented by other supervisors as well. And so I, at this particular point, I just don't really see anything here. And be happy to hear from my other fellow committee members if they see something, but to me, this is on the track to be sent to the board with a recommendation for dismissal.
Other comments from committee members?
Yeah, Dr. Stenhoff, this is Diana. I just had one quick comment. I do agree with Dr. Davey. One of the things that I do want to caution Ms. Ornon or others, we have students on the call today, is that potential crossing of the dual relationships when it comes to supervisors and supervisees. And I'm sure that this is a kind of lesson learned for Ms. Orn when it comes to what level and degree do you provide support around some of those non-supervisory related concerns. It used to be back years ago that supervisees and supervisors were friends, and we hung out and got drinks together. We went to the bars. The standards were, and I'm dating myself. It was many years ago. Through several renditions of the ethics code, it's been really clarified now that no, a supervisee is a client. We must treat them as a client. We perform assessments. We have intervention plans that move them towards the greater goals, all of which were all met. But in that, the little pieces and conversations around, like the extended text messages, I understand where they were coming from, but I do think it's a good example of where we do have to kind of draw those lines and have those boundaries with our supervisees so that we're not misleading or misrepresenting the relationship. Because while I don't think there was anything that was inappropriate about what was said, the person perceiving it may have perceived that as a friendship, a little bit of a different type of encouragement, not necessarily a work thing. And when that happens, then there's other emotions and feelings that kind of get attached into that. So I bring that up just because I understand that the text messages, the intents were to be supportive to the individual. However, mm-hmm. I also think it's a good example of why we caution around even having those correspondences outside of work via text message, those sorts of things, which I think after you realize the direction it was going, you did put things in place to say like, hey, we're not texting after hours. We're not doing any of these. But just for the purpose of, again, lessons learned, and talking with the other students, who are listening in, that it's a really good example of where at the onset of the relationship, we need to set those boundaries, because it can get slippery pretty quick.
Any other comments from committee members? Okay. So Dr. Davey, you did make a motion earlier just to confirm. Oh, go ahead, Dr. Davey.
That's fine. I'll make the motion. I just want to make one other final comment. Ms. Warren, I know that this is a highly stressful situation. I know that, you know, receiving this complaint probably, you know, brought you to many sleepless nights. And I just want to thank you for coming forward, presenting yourself in a professional manner, providing us the documentation, having your agency support you in providing that documentation. And thank you for that level of professionalism. And I just want to recognize that when these do come through for some of our younger BCBAs, you know, those that are just getting into supervisory positions, as Dr. Davis-Wilson was just alluding to, that this is part of being in that position, that these can happen. There can be miscommunication. There can be a real risk that is in place because of a supervisor's behavior, because of a licensee's behavior. And, you know, part of that process is for us to be able to look at them and to decide, you know, what we see in terms of action behavior by the licensee. And so just want to recognize that this was most likely stressful and that we appreciate the information. I'll go ahead and make the motion that this be moved to the full board for dismissal.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. Do I have a second on that?
I'll second that.
Okay. Further discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, thank you. Motion carries. And as Dr. Davey stated, Ms. Horn, thank you for attending and providing a well-crafted statement as well, giving us information. So thank you.
Dr. Davis, did I hear you vote aye in support of the motion?
Yes.
Okay, thanks.
And I was also the one that seconded it as well.
Mr. Chairman, just to add, this recommendation will be reviewed by the board next week, and I'll be notifying all parties later today.
And I assume I'll be the one carrying this one forward to the board, correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I think we need to figure out how to notify Dr. Rains. Oh, there she is.
And really quick, we've been going for, we're going to be hitting an hour here in about 4 minutes. Do we need to post a CE code word yet?
It's about that time, Dr. Stenhoff. So the code word is skydiving. Skydiving.
A spelling count.
That's actually a good question, Dr. Davey.
What if I just do an emoji of skydiving?
Is it two words? Is it one word? So yeah.
Hyphenated.
Yes. All right. Okay. I'm planning on offering up a comfort break at 11 o'clock. Does anybody need to have a comfort break prior to 11? Okay. All right. So let's move on. We are now reviewing applications. First application is James Tamick. I'm the lead on that one. Yes, Dr. Davey.
Perhaps a slight point of order. We do have several of the applicants on the call. Do we want to try to prioritize them since we do have 30 applications to go through today?
Based on the numbers, Dr. Davey, it appears that almost every applicant is on this call, but I might be misled by that. I know Ms. Tamick is actually here. I see her. Board staff, is the number of attendees so large it'd be difficult to organize it that way? I'd be happy to comply with Dr. Davey's request.
Mr. Chair, whatever is the pleasure of the committee, we follow your direction.
Wow.
Dr. Stenhoff, at a glance, there actually is not a ton of applicants. There's a few on the line. We have several ASU students on the line that, and then several current BCBAs as well. So,
I did know of the students attending. So, appreciate the students being here too. We could, board staff, if possible, would you, to the extent that you can, direct us, to the attenders, and we can go through and try to get through everybody that's attending?
We certainly can.
All right.
Let's keep the pace, such that we can keep up. And I know that our first applicant is here. I can confirm that much.
I can confirm the second. So we've got two, so you can start out.
All right, perfect. Okay, so Ms. Tamick received her BCBA certificate in November of 2016. She graduated in December of 2015 from Ball State University with a Master's of Arts in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,500 hours of supervision under Kelly Curtin in Illinois, which at the time did not require licensure. As of our August 2022 meeting, Ms. Curtin did not provide the BACB verification form. However, after the August meeting, the board received that document. So at this time, I don't know any concerns with this application. I recommend that it be moved forward to the board for approval. Do I have any other comments on that application? Okay. All right. Ms. Tamick, do you have any comments to make at this time since you attended? And we do appreciate you being here.
Yes, I just want to say, again, thank you so much for the feedback that I got in the last meeting. That definitely did the trick. She submitted it later that day, like within a couple hours, once I mentioned the ethical code. So thank you so much for that. It was very helpful.
So glad to hear. Thank goodness for ethics, right? So... all right, here we go. Thank you. Next application is Emma Mass. Dr. Davey, you are the lead on that, and Ms. Mass is on the phone on the call.
Emma Mass is coming forward for licensure in the state of Arizona. She is currently a board-certified behavior analyst that was active as of July 20th, 2022. She completed her application, noting that she received her master's degree in special education with a concentration in applied behavior analysis from Arizona State University. She reported that her supervised experience towards certification and licensure occurred at Jigsaw Developmental Services in Scottsdale, Arizona, under her professional, supervisor, Sarah Carrasco. And reviewing the information that's provided, we have all the pertinent information with regard to her 1, 2, 3, 4 supervisors that provided hours. Again, the bulk coming from Ms. Carrasco, all had appropriate supervision training, all had initial Arizona State licensure at the appropriate dates. I see no issue with this other than a minor clerical error. And board staff can work with Ms. Mass to correct this. On the documentation that is received from her supervisor, the dates of supervision are listed as October 12th, 2022 through February 11th of 2022. I believe that should be October 12th of 2020. So just a minor typo there that should be able to be corrected. With that, move this forward for approval by the full board.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. And Ms. Mass, do you have any comments you'd like to make since you're attending?
Yeah, thank you for having me. That mistake that you mentioned sounds about right to me, so we can clear that up. And yeah, thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. Board staff, would you please advise me on who we might...
And board staff, just so you know, that's page 8 of 13 on the application that I'm referencing. It's the part that's typed in for the dates in the middle of the document. Okay. I did see, I thought, one more of mine on there. Was that
Dr. Davey, are you just picking that out so we get through yours quicker? Or
no, don't worry. I'm just scanning. I know the names from reviewing it, but I did see that I believe it's Miss Lindley Day maybe on.
The licensees can identify themselves.
Yeah.
Alexis, yes. Sorry, Mr. Chair. I do have Z's been keeping track, and I trust that she's doing that very effectively. We show number seven, applicant number seven.
Okay.
The next one.
Let's hop to Nicole Balestieri. Ms. Denton is recused from that. I am the reviewer. Ms. Balestieri received her BCBA certificate in June of 2021. She graduated in December of 2021 from Arizona State University's online program with a Master's of Ed in Curriculum and Instruction and Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,510 hours of supervision under Michelle Downey, who is an Arizona licensed behavior analyst. I did not know any concerns with this application and recommend it move forward to the board for approval. Any other conversation about that? Okay. Board staff, do we have another that we can? Oh, I'm sorry. Ms. Balestieri, do you have any comments to make? If you attended, are you on? Oh, yeah, you are on because we picked on you. So.
So then we would move to Meredith Essie, who is immediately below.
Okay. All right. So the next application, Dr. Race, you are the reviewer for that one.
Yes. So this applicant received their BCBA in 2014. They completed a master's in forensic psychology in 2006, as well as a certificate in ABA in 2011 from Penn State. Their supervision all occurred in San Diego at Verbal Behavior Associates between January of 2014 and March of 2016 for a total of 1,500 hours under the supervision of Katia Artiano. In reviewing the application, I did not note any issues of concern and would recommend that it be moved forward to the board.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Aids. All right. Board staff, next application.
Yes. 11 Molly Barrett.
Okay. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the reviewer for that.
Yes. So Ms. Barrett is applying for initial licensure. She passed her exam in June of 2022. She was licensed in good standing in New York through their Department of Education. She completed her master's in ABA from ASU in 2020, and she did her supervision in Indiana from 2020 to 2021 for her 1,500 hours. I have reviewed the application. I do not have any concerns with the application, and I would recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
And Ms. Barrett, you are on the call. Would you like to make any further comments?
No, thank you. I'm happy to be in Arizona.
All right. Well, thank you. Welcome. Okay. Board staff, next application.
Mr. Chair, I believe we have number 12, Alexis Myers.
Okay. And I am the reviewer for that. Ms. Myers received her BCBA certificate in July of 2022. She graduated in March of 2022 from Capella University with a Master's of Science in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 2,215.75 hours of supervision under multiple supervisors who are all Arizona licensed behavior analysts. I did not know any concerns with this application and would recommend it move forward to the board for approval. And I know that Ms. Myers is on the call. Do you have any further comments to make?
No, thank you.
All right, thank you. Thanks for being here. Okay. All right, board staff.
Mr. Chair, I believe number 14, Allison Gehrman.
Okay. All right. And Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the reviewer for her application.
Yep. So Ms. Gehrman passed her exam in June of 2022. She did complete a master's believe it is U of A, but my writing is not grand. In 2021, she did receive all of her supervision, over 1500 hours, between 2020 and 2021 from an Arizona licensed behavior analyst. I reviewed her application and I do not have any concerns. I would recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson. Ms. Gehrman, you're on the call. Do you have any further comments to make?
Just wanted to thank you all for your time. I appreciate it.
And thank you for being here. Yeah, appreciate it. So, all right, board staff.
Mr. Chair, number 15, Brittany Moore.
Okay. And Ms. Dent, you're the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Moore comes forth seeking licensure after passing her exam on January 14th of 2022. She graduated from Arizona State University with a Master's of Education in Curriculum and Instruction in Applied Behavior Analysis in December of 2017. She received all of her supervision in the state of Arizona, ranging from August 2019 until August of 2021, for a total of 1,500 hours. There is one small typological error. It is found on page 6 of the application where it says that the applicant received 1,500 hours per week. Pending the small error being fixed on the application, I see no reason why. I would not recommend that it moves forward to the full board for approval.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Den. And Ms. Moore, do you have any further comments to make? Okay, hearing none. Board staff, next application.
Number 17, Samantha Shaw.
Okay. All right, and let's see where. 17. Okay. Yeah, Dr. Davey. Yeah, and then I need to make a disclosure. Ms. Shaw was a student in the program that I work for, and I taught several classes, but I feel that I can review this application without bias.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I will make a similar disclosure, except I only taught one class during COVID. So it was online. Unfortunately, I wasn't even able to have the opportunity to meet the students, but she was a student of mine in the very beginning of her program. I feel like I can move forward without any issues or concerns.
Thank you. Dr. Davey.
I'm just waiting. Any other statements from the committee? All right. Very good. Yes, Ms. Shaw comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. She's a board-certified behavior analyst that's been active since August 10th of 2022. She received her Master's of Science in Psychology and a concentration in Applied Behavior Analysis from Arizona State University. We also see that she received her supervised experience towards certification here in Arizona and under the tutelage of a licensed behavior analyst that is listed as Ms. Holmes, as well as another BCBA, Ms. Fleming. And looking at the application, we have a BACB final field verification that has been put forward in terms of her hours. We have both Ms. Fleming's verification of her being eligible for a supervisor. We also have we have a group of individuals that were in the state of Ohio that provided some of the early on supervision for this licensee. The Ohio licenses were in place and effective at the time for the supervisors as this individual was receiving supervision. And so in looking at the information provided then for Ohio, all of that looks good. The information provided by the state of Arizona listed again three particular individuals that all had appropriate start dates, providing supervision when aligned with their licenses in the state of Arizona. I think at this point there, I didn't have any questions and I would move that this go forward to the full board.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. And Ms. Shaw, since you're on the call, would you like to make any comments? Okay, hearing none. All right, board staff, next suggestion.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I believe we are jumping down now to number 24, Lindley Day.
And Dr. Davey, you're the lead on that?
I am the lead on this one. And I'll just say to the committee that I'm going to jump right to the punchline on this, that the application of itself is problematic in that the supervision, the individual is working in a public school, received her supervision, or I shouldn't say it was a public school, but it was at least in a school setting, and received her supervision from an individual that was not licensed. The entire 1500 hours appears to have occurred during that period of time. And so the issue would be that that would not be acceptable for us in terms of receiving or moving this forward. And I do believe the applicant is on the call. I know that board staff has gone back and forth with just some very basic questions about the supervision experience and the individual that was supervising her, and all indications are that this would not be able to move forward.
Any other comments from committee members?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I do agree with Dr. Davey. We do have a large number of students on the call. So I do want to just clarify that the concern here is that in Arizona, if you're employed by a school system, then there's an exemption for licensure. However, when you go to apply for licensure, it is required that you received 1500 hours under a licensed behavior analyst. So by an individual being supervised in the school system, that makes them eligible for sitting for their exam. It makes them eligible for continuing to work in a school system, but to actually leave that school system or seek employment outside of that, they would need to provide for us some sort of proof that licensure by a licensed behavior analyst occurred.
So the applicant's on the line. Like, if she'd like to unmute herself, if she has any questions or for us, happy to entertain those questions and so that we can get in the right direction. But at this point, I mean, I think the committee would agree that the 1500 hours of supervision would have to be repeated this time under someone who is licensed as a behavior analyst. If this applicant wishes to work outside of the school systems.
Am I able to ask my previous supervisor if she was licensed?
I believe we pulled the licensure, we pulled her name through our own licensure database, and there is no license for her. If there is a different supervisor you had besides the one that's listed on here, I believe her name is, I'm sorry, I've scrolled down a few pages on the document. Other than the one you've listed as your primary supervisor, then yes, we would, if there was supervision occurring by someone other than Tara Majaris, then we would be very interested in you submitting that documentation to us for review.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, so any further comments on this application?
I think we need some direction probably here. Do we work with this? Do we need to have this? Do we deny this, or do we ask them to withdraw it? What's the advice of Ms. Galvin at this point?
You could send a first request for additional information if she has another supervisor. You could also recommend to the board that they either deny the application or give her the opportunity to withdraw. But typically you do give the applicant an opportunity to kind of remedy any suspected deficiency.
Okay.
I don't know if she's on the line and she could tell us whether she has another supervisor or whether a first request for additional information would be futile.
Ms. Day, do you have another supervisor?
Sorry, I was like trying to still to unmute. I mean, right now I'm doing like a mentorship with a supervisor.
Are you in the state of Arizona?
Yes, I am.
Okay, this is a mentorship you're doing, and it doesn't sound like you're accumulating hours at this point, but do you have somebody who is, first of all, a BCBA, and second of all, well, I guess mainly, somebody who's licensed in the state of Arizona providing supervision or could provide supervision if that relationship was established?
I would have to reach out and find out.
So perhaps the best thing would be is to issue that FAIR, have Ms. Day work with the staff if she has any questions, and then we'll go from there. Let her, give her some time to make the inquiries.
Absolutely. Right. So I guess that will be my recommendation, Mr. Chair, is to just second what Ms. Galvin said, instruct board staff to send out a FAIR, and let's see what kind of information we get back, and then we can decide where to go from there.
All right, thank you, Dr. Bing. All right, board staff, do we have another application?
Yes, we will now move to 21, Cinda Atwood.
Okay. Let's see. Okay, I am the reviewer for that. Ms. Atwood responded to a second additional information request that includes first a revision of her start date of her graduate work start date, to which Ms. Atwood provided the document change in her application materials. Second, the committee provided verification of her, requested verification of her 1,500 hours, and Ms. Atwood provided a signed final verification of 1,500 hours from Heather Ramson, who is an Arizona licensed behavior analyst. Based on the information that we received through this information request, that I recommend that it move forward to the board for approval. And Ms. Atwood, you're on the call. Would you like to make any comments?
I'd like to thank the staff that has helped me tremendously through the process. It was incredibly helpful. Thank you. And I appreciate the time that you've given me today.
Thank you. Board staff, thank you for doing that as well. Appreciate it. So, okay. Next application.
Mr. Chair, we now have 25, Adriana Quintana.
All right. Thank you. And to Dr. Davis Wilson, we're on that.
Yes, Ms. Quintana passed her exam in November of 2018. She did complete her master's in applied behavior analysis from ASU in 2017. She did over 2,000 hours. She did about 2,200 hours in the state of California between the periods of 2019 and 2022. I have reviewed her application, and I don't have any concerns. I'd recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
All right. And Ms. Quintana, you're on the call. Do you have any further comments? Oh, you might be muted, I think.
So sorry about that.
There you are.
No other comments. I just wanted to say thank you so much. I'm happy to be back in the state of Arizona to provide service.
Well, we're glad to have you. So thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, board staff, any other applications?
Yes, let's move to number 29, Alicia Kimbrell.
Okay, Dr. Davy.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm going to toggle over here to that. All right, Ms. Kimbrell comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. She's been a board certified behavior analyst since September 6th of 2022. Notes that she received her degree from Capella University in applied behavior analysis. That was her graduate certificate, was at Grand Canyon prior to that with a master's in science of psychology. One small clerical note, I believe item number 18, page 5 of 19 on the application is marked NA. I believe that should probably be a no, but board staff, if you want to, there's nothing there that, you know, could just be corrected or modified to be for the record correct. Individual lists my kid as licensee or applicant lists my kid as the location where she received her supervised experience towards licensure that ran from 2020 to 2021. Information provided about her supervisors show that they were in good standing with the BACB to be able to provide supervision, as well as they were certified, and then also that their Arizona State licenses were in place during this time. Minor, you know, minus the one minor clerical cleanup item, I would see this one go forward to the board.
All right, thank you. And Ms. Kimbrell, you're on the call. Do you have any further comments? Okay. All right. Board staff, any other applications that need to prioritize?
Yes. Mr. Chair, we have number 30, Adrian Zabo, present.
Okay. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead on that.
Yes. Ms. Zabo passed her exam in November of 2018. She completed a master's from National University in 2017. She did complete over 1,500 hours from 2017 to 2018. And she is seeking initial licensure. I reviewed her application and I don't have any concerns. I would recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Great, thank you. And Ms. Zabo, since you're here, do you have any further comments? I think you're muted. Yeah, I think we might be having a microphone issue because you're unmuted, but your mic is not picking up the audio. All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for being here. All right. Ms. Packin, on any further to prioritize?
So our next applicant is in B1, the universal recognition category. But maybe we should just do one more check to see if we've overlooked anybody in the A section of the agenda. Ms. Malice, did you find anyone else?
No, I did not. I don't know of the phone numbers. I don't know who that is. And then the other names I do not recognize.
Okay, so if anyone wants to self-identify, if you're one of the applicants in Section A, oh, there's a Danielle who raised her hand. Is that Danielle Hook?
Danielle. I'm sorry, I don't know the categories, but I should be up for application.
And what is your last name, Danielle?
Argenbright.
Okay, Mr. Chair, that's number 20.
Okay. All right. So let's see. Dr. Rach, you're the lead on that. And Dr. Davis-Wilson is recused from this application.
Okay. So our applicant received their BCBA in 2022. They also indicated that they do hold a license in cosmetology in the state of Michigan. They earned their master's in education degree from ASU in 2019 and completed supervision across a number of organizations and a number of supervisors that occurred between August of 2020 and March of 21. I take that back. I'm sorry. Yep, March of 21 for a total of 1,569 hours and 63. I reviewed all of the requirements for the different supervisors. I did not note any issues, and so I would recommend that this be moved forward to the board for approval.
And any further comments from the applicant?
I just want to say thank you to the board and especially to Zakaya. She's the one I had the most communication with, and she did really great at having screened my application. So just wanted to give her a shout out as well.
Thank you. Yeah, she's pretty great. So, all right. Let's see here. Board staff, any further?
We don't find anyone else in Section A. So,
it's your pleasure whether you want to jump to section B and then you can do the motion at the end with combine both.
Yes, let's go ahead and do that. So Ms. Denton, are you ready to review that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I am not quite sure how to pronounce the applicant's last name. If the applicant would like to speak up and let me know how to say their last name, then I'm happy to not butcher it. Okay, I'm going to just give it a shot then. Just gonna try that out. Miss Naya McLeod.
So close. McAuliffe.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's great.
I particularly like that she waited until you tried before she chimed in.
Great timing. Great presence.
Oh, okay. Well, going forward, she finished her her degree from Arizona State University, receiving a master's in curriculum and instruction. After she became a board certified behavior analyst, she became licensed in Washington and Utah. She recently became licensed in Utah, so that wouldn't meet the 1 year requirement. However, in Washington, she has been licensed for over 1 year at this point. She submitted proof of residency through her utility bills. Her licenses in two different states have been in good standing. I did not note any concerns with this application and would move that it goes forward to the full board for approval via universal recognition.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Denton. And Ms. McAuliffe, do you have any further comments?
No, thank you guys so much for your time. I'm excited to be working in Arizona.
All right. Well, thank you for being here. So, all right. I've got 11 o'clock. Does anybody need a comfort break?
I would like one, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. So let's reconvene at 11:10. Would that be sufficient?
I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So we'll reconvene at 11:10. Thank you. So let's go ahead and proceed. Okay. So next application is Jessica McGowan. Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me get to this applicant. All right. Ms. McGowan passed her board-certified behavior analyst exam on November 30th of 2019, shortly after graduating in August of 2019 from the University of Cincinnati, where she received her Master of Education. She received all of her supervision in the state of Florida for a total of 1,500 hours from January 29th of 2018 until February 15th of 2019 from one supervisor. On page 9 of the application, there are the questions that ask whether or not the supervisor and the supervisee had a relationship where the supervisor would be relative, subordinate, or an employee of the applicant. This was selected as yes. Additionally, there was the question that requested if there were any modifications made to the pandemic that were not captured. This was also listed as yes, but there was no explanation of what modifications were made. So given this information at this point, I do believe that we need to have board staff reach out for that first additional information request to find out if perhaps this was just a typo. Maybe they selected yes instead of no, or if it was in fact a situation where the supervisor was a relative subordinate or employee of the applicant, as well as the modifications made during the pandemic.
Any other comments from committee members? All right. Thank you, Ms. Denton. Next application is Danielle Hook. Dr. Rates, you're the lead on that?
Yes. So Ms. Hook received her BCBA in 2017. She also indicated she's licensed in Texas and Washington. She completed a master's in science degree in psychology at Capella University in 2017 and received supervision in Texas between November 2014 and November 2016 under the supervision of Heather Moore for a total of 1,518 hours. In reviewing the application, I did not note any issues and would recommend that it go to the board for approval.
Thank you. Let's see. Next application is Holly Spring Collinsworth. Dr. Dave, you're the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Collinsworth comes forward seeking a licensure in the state of Arizona. Has been a board certified behavior analyst since August of 2019 and also holds licensure in the state of Texas. She has listed master's in special education while she was at the University of North Texas, received her supervision towards experience and licensure while working at a school district in Plano, Texas. She has provided the information with regard to her degrees, as well as her information from her supervisor. The list she accumulated more than the 1,500 hours needed. In addition, the person that was supervising her, Ms. Sheridan, was had original license date of 2018, and so was within our kind of guidelines of making sure that the individual, if there is licensure, is licensed and outside of the state of Arizona. I see no issues with this application and suggest we allow it to move forward.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Let's see. Next application is Brianna Leviston. Dr. Davey, again, you have the lead on that.
Yeah, remember when you said I was trying to get through all mine first? No, that's just not true.
I retract my statement.
Thank you. I'd like you to retract that, and I'd like the record to show that you were wrong for once. All right. So Ms. Levinston's coming forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. She has been a board certified behavior analyst since February of 2021. She holds licensure in the state of Texas, as well as licensure in the state of Oregon. Both are verified and both are active and in good standing. Listed her supervised experience that occurred in 2018 and 2019 in Texas. During that time, the individual that was supervising her was licensed and in good standing in the state of Texas. Individuals also in good standing with the BACB and able to provide supervision activities. And with that, I would say this one can also move forward to the board.
All right, thank you. Next application is Marlon Weiss. I am recused from that application. Ms. Denton, you have the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Weiss passed her exam in May of 2021 after completing a couple of different options here. So in August of 2006, she received a Master's in Science in Learning from the University of North Dakota. She continued on to receive her verified course sequence, which was completed in May of 2015 from the Florida Institute of Technology. She has supervision occurring from multiple supervisors in the state of Arizona who all hold licenses in good standing. She had a total of 1,864 hours of supervised experience from those licensed behavior analysts in the state who all had the appropriate licensure and supervision coursework in place at this point. I do not note any concerns with Ms. Weiss's application and would recommend that it goes forward to the full board for approval.
Thank you. Next application is Madison Burke. I'm the lead on that. Ms. Burke received her BCBA certificate in June of 2022. She graduated in December of 2021 from Arizona State University with a Master's of Arts in Special Education and Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,500 hours of supervision under a licensed Arizona behavior analyst. She is also a certified educator in the state of Arizona, but has no past disciplinary action. I did not know any concerns with this application and recommend it move forward to the board for approval. Let's see. Next application is Tiana Bonds Marshall. Let's see. Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scrolling. Okay. Ms. Bonds passed her exam in May of 2021 after graduating in August of 2019 with a Master's of Art in Special Education and Behavior Support from the University of Arizona. She received her supervision from February 2019 until February of 2021 with three supervisors who are licensed in the state. At the time, she also received some of her supervision from Rebecca Hartzell through the University of Arizona. Given all of this, she accumulated 1,507 hours in the state of Arizona. At this point, I don't note any concerns with her application, but would open it up to other committee members before I move it forward.
Any other comments? All right. Thank you. All right. Next application is Lindsay Osborne. Dr. Reitz, you're the lead on that.
Yes. Ms. Osborne received her board certification in 2019. She indicated that she is also licensed as a behavior analyst in Texas, as well as a teaching certificate in the state of Texas. She received her master's in education in 2018. She did receive supervision in Texas from January of 2018 through August of 2019 for a total of 1,503 hours under the supervision of Tyla Wilshire. In reviewing the licensure for Texas, it did go into effect after she was licensed, once that went into effect. So she was licensed in the state when she was providing that supervision. So when I reviewed the application, I didn't see any issues of concern and would suggest that it move forward to the board for approval.
All right, great. Thank you. Next application is Catherine Hayden. I'm the lead on that one. Ms. Hayden received her BCBA certificate in August of 2022. She graduated in March of 2022 from Arizona State University with Master's of Arts in Special Education, Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 1,832.67 hours of supervision under multiple supervisors who are Arizona licensed behavior analysts. One note I did, of note, on the multiple supervisors at one organization form that's provided from the board, Supervisor Jennifer Hawley was licensed in August of 2022 and began supervision in May of 2021. Ms. Hawley's supervision consisted of 44 hours, but Ms. Hayden's hours still exceed the 1,500 hour requirement even with that. So other than that, I did not know any concerns with this application and recommend that move forward to the board for approval. Okay, next application, Carla Smith. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you're the lead on that.
Hey, Ms. Smith passed her exam in October of 2021. She did complete a master's from ASU in 2020. She did receive all of her supervision from a licensed behavior analyst between the periods 2019-2020, and she did over the 1,500 hours. I have reviewed her application, and I did not note any concerns.
Thank you. Let's see. Next application is Rebecca Odom. Dr. Davis-Wilson, again, you're the reviewer for that.
Yep. So Ms. Odom passed her exam in November of 2018. She also completed a master's degree from ASU's Applied Behavior Analysis Curriculum and Instruction Program. She did her supervision in California between 2016 and 2017. I have reviewed her application. I don't note any concerns, and I would recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
All right, great. Thank you. Next application is Samantha Barth. Dr. Reitz, you're the lead on that.
Yes. So this applicant received their board certification in 2022. They completed their Master's of Education from ASU between January of 2020 and August of 21. Supervision occurred between August of 2020 and April of 22 for a total of 2,013 hours. There were multiple supervisors listed. All were in good standing. So I didn't note any issues with the application, and I would recommend that it move forward to the board for approval.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, next application is Jin Yao Martha Xu. Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that.
Yes, I am. Ms. Martha Xu passed her exam in August of 2021 after receiving a Master's of Arts in Professional Behavior Analysis from FIT in May of 2021. She received her supervision from January 1st of 2019 until April 30th of 2021 for a total of 2,154. Again, I made a mistake there. 2,154. I don't note any concerns with this application, but there is one error that should be corrected on page 8 of the application. There is one of the years that is listed as 3,021, and I'm going to presume that should be 2,021. Even with this error, everything else looks fine.
Great, thank you. Next application is Molly Wendorf. Dr. Reitz, you're the lead on that?
Yes. So Molly received her board certification in 2022. She completed a master's in education at ASU in 2020. Supervision occurred in San Diego at Verbal Behavior Associates, and it was under a multitude of supervisors that were all listed. It took multiple pages to complete. In reviewing that, the supervisors did meet the qualifications. The only thing I noted is that in those several pages where each supervisor is listed, 1500 is listed for each of them, which is an error, I believe, because the singular form does show 1500 as the total. So if we wanted to have them just make that correction, I think that would be useful. But apart from that, that was the only thing I really noted across all of those many, many, many supervisors.
Dr. Davis-Wilson.
I was just going to say, in the past, I think, given the nature of how the organizations and the multiple supervisors can work, especially when you have that number of supervisors, I think in the past, we've allowed to not have the breakdown, because what's challenging in those organizations when you have that many supervisors is that they're oftentimes supervising simultaneously. So it could be that in any one week, they see two or three different supervisors. And if the hours are captured by the month, or, you know, even when you break that down, it's hard to say this supervisor did this many versus this many versus this many because of that. So I would be okay moving it forward. I'm sure 1500 is probably an underestimate of what actually happened as well in those types of organizations.
Great.
I would be comfortable with that. And they do have the one singular one that is signed by, I think it's Catherine. Yeah, Catherine Pope. So that, I think, covers it as well.
All right. Okay, the last application is Taylor Grossman. I'm the lead on that. Ms. Grossman received her BCBA's certificate in July of 2022. She graduated in April of 2022 from Simmons University online program with a Master's of Science in Applied Behavior Analysis. She received 2,000.7 hours of supervision under multiple supervisors who are Arizona licensed behavior analysts. I did not know any concerns with this application, recommend it move forward to the board for approval. So that ends our review of the applications. Board staff, would somebody mind providing a summary from which we may motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So everyone moved forward to the full board except for the number 2 is a typo, number 15 there's a typo, number 26 there's a typo, and number 29 there's a typo. And then the fair letters are for number 3 and for number 24.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Malice. Great. All right. So can I have somebody make a motion from that?
You want us all to make it at the same time? Because we're all
I know. It's.
I will go ahead and make
the, ruminate on that.
I'll make the motion to move those forward to the full board.
All right. Can we get a second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Further discussion? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right. Ms. Mouse, we're at the about the 2-hour mark. Do we want to release another CE code word?
We sure do. The next code word is POP. P-O-P-S, POP.
All right. Thank you.
I'm trying to find a theme between these, but I haven't done it yet.
I know. It's not like Miss Poe has a theme. I mean, she's usually like, I only can imagine this next week's going to be very much around either fall or Halloween. I'm excited to see what it's going to be. I think we'll have to try to guess. We'll have to see what her connections are. It'll be like a little game.
I'm so sorry. I understood hop, but the spelling didn't. didn't align with HOP. So would you say the code word again, please?
Yes, it is POPS, P as in Paul, O, P as in Paul, S.
Okay, got it. Thank you so much.
Maybe your ears pop when you're skydiving?
Yeah, no. Okay, let's see. Agenda item number 9, discussion about the Telehealth Advisory Committee, Dr. Davey.
You know, at this point, I have no update. The last meeting was canceled, and we don't really have any pending timelines for any sort of action for the legislature. So I suspect that we'll have some things on pause, at least probably it very well could run through the end of the year. So we'll see.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Dr. Senhoff, yeah. I apologize. Dr. Davey, I have a question on that. And perhaps it's one that you may not have the answer to, but may seek and come back to. So we've got the telehealth work going on through legislation, the codes, that set that you're working on. But we've already had the telehealth piece enacted, or the telehealth registry enacted. Is there conversation, or has there been conversation around, because I know that the code set has already been in place. This is like moving it into like the permanent code set and the, you know, for access specifically and such. Mm-hmm. What happens as far as the funders then, if you're in the telehealth registry, but the funders require Arizona license, is there like, and maybe that's a legal question for Jean. I'm just curious as to what that would look like. Now that we have this telehealth registry, and they're allowed to register and provide services in the state, but the state access plans require proof of licensure to provide services by the state access plans. How does, or does, has that been remediated? Does one standard trump another? Like, what does that look like? I don't know if anybody's even...
Yeah. I don't know what that looks like. I haven't thought about that or have not been presented with that issue. And I also don't know if it would be within the board or the committee's purview to answer that. That might be more with access and other insurers, how they're going to interpret that.
Yeah, and we have not, I would say that that's probably not the purview of the committee as it stands today, but would probably be a question that Access them itself would have to put out some sort of policy statement on how to marry the two. But I mean, the charge of this board is to look at the code set and to really push forward the codes that make sense for audio, make sense for video, make sense for in person, and to essentially provide the legislature with our feedback on which codes belong where, when, and how. It would not get into that interplay there, Dr. Davis-Wilson. So perhaps that's a better question for Access.
Well, and I guess my question for here then, because I do agree it's a question for Access, but I guess my question here goes back to then the telehealth registry. There's nothing in that specific legal language around the registry that addresses any of that, right? So the telehealth registry is like, hey, we're giving you permission to practice here, but there's nothing in it that dictates the funding aspect of it. It says you can practice here, but it's up to you to figure out the contracts, right? That, I guess that's the clarification that I was seeking on that, on the actual telehealth registry language.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think just because you've signed up for that, that gives you, you still have to with contract and credential to be able to effectively practice outside of like anything other than like your own professional company, right? I mean, you'd need that. If you were going to bill insurance, bill any of those funders, you would need that.
Absolutely.
Why do you ask such tough questions?
Well, I was just making sure there wasn't any weird, like, you know, yeah, I mean this with all respect to our governor, but sometimes our governor passes things that have unintended components in it. And I was just making sure that there wasn't anything in there that was like overstepping
like, mm-hmm. like universal recognition, like that wasn't like overstepping and putting the cart before the horse on the telehealth registry. That's all. So if the telehealth registry doesn't define that, I totally agree with you, Dr. Davey, that then that's between the provider and the payer. I totally agree. I just wanted to make sure that there was not any like funky, like, I don't want to say overreach because I don't think that's the intention, but not any funky verbiage within the registry that needed our attention, just the registry itself as it pertains to that relationship. I don't think there is, but I just wanted to make sure.
Mr. Chair, can I ask Dr. Davey a question too?
Yeah, please.
The statute 363608 requires the regulatory boards to report on the last day of every month how many applicants we have received to the registry. So I report those numbers to Lauren Prohl, who is the point person, I think, for maybe coordinates the committee's work. I believe that's a semi-apt description of, does she report back to the committee on those numbers?
She does so much work within Access. You're presenting those to her. Those are not something that comes back to us on that registry. Like, we don't see those numbers. I would guess those are probably presented at an Access stakeholders meeting somewhere. But that's not necessarily the purview of this committee.
Thank you for that.
But I'm more than happy to go back and ask her to give them to us so I can report them back to you.
Well, Mr. Chair, I am curious, of course, because our board made a decision for a delayed implementation because we continue to accept the emergency temporary licensure applications, and we knew that no one would apply to the registry because of the other application opportunity presented so many more advantages than the registry does. The fee alone, you know, that's the fact that the temporary emergency licenses were no fee and the registry requires a fee. So
yeah. If you want to work with me to maybe...
I'm having some work done in my house, so I'll finish it up later.
If you want to work with me to kind of pose some of those questions, I'm happy to bring them up and then bring them and see if we can get some answers through this mechanism with that committee.
And Dr. Stenhoff, Dr. Davey, I guess I'm just like, now that we're getting close to the temporary license date expiring, I'm worried about what might creep up in the registry. And I think that's why, and perhaps this is actually this is going to be a future agenda item. So I'll actually withhold my comment.
Again, if we want to work with board staff to kind of put together some questions, I'm happy to get them back out there and come back with some reports on that information that Ms. Pacanon and this committee, and I'm guessing the larger board, would be interested in. Heidi's waiting for the worker to stop pounding something, it looks like.
Any further questions or comments regarding this item? Okay. All right, let's move on to the next item. Recent updates from the BACB, Ms. Pacanon.
Mr. Chair, could we come back to this agenda item? It is extraordinarily loud outside of my
Absolutely.
Office.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay. Let's see here. Ms. Pacanon, you are listed as the lead on all the next agenda items, of course. So would you... Do we want to table any of those items at this point or feel that?
Mr. Chair, I think that Dr. Davis-Wilson can step in for agenda item 11. I think that she was the impetus for this anyway. So hopefully my memo and her summary is helpful.
Okay. Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you want to?
Yep. Let me switch my notes real quick. So just a quick summary on this matter. As we have evolved, or as the BACB has evolved in some of their terminology and clarification, the term supervisor has also kind of evolved. And what I had actually proposed that we have kind of a discussion around what implications may occur in this evolution, change of standards by the BACB, and then how, one, we review applications, but two, how we make those distinctions a little bit clearer. And then the third part is to what obligation we either have or may potentially at some point want to have towards the role of a consulting supervisor. So, you know, it used to be that you had a BACB supervisor or BACB supervisors, and those individuals were responsible for overseeing your practicum experience. Well, now, through kind of this evolution, the BACB has now determined a pathway for agencies to have your supervisors and then a responsible supervisor. So somebody that within the contract and at the onset of the services is responsible for ensuring that all of your supervision meets the standards of the BACB. So they're the ones oftentimes signing the monthly forms, doing those things, but they're not necessarily the ones providing the direct supervision. The direct supervision can come from a team of people who would also be on the contract and what have you. And those ones are oftentimes just deemed the supervisor. And then more recently this year, we also had the addition of the consulting supervisor. The role of the consulting supervisor is to provide supervision to the supervisor during their first year. And so one of the standards that the BACB changed is that during the first year that you are a BCBA, you must also be supervised when supervising others. And so that's kind of a new kind of nugget that isn't really defined in our statutes. It's not something we screen or monitor for. But it is a standard set by the BACB. And I do know that several of our rules kind of crosswalk to those standards. And then one other type of supervisor that we run into in these applications is then that employment supervisor. And I know at one point we tried to make the applicant, Dr. Davey actually tried to make the application as clear as possible to say, like, who is your supervisor for your supervised experience? But we're still seeing that, especially in the cases in which that supervisor may be subcontracted, they're still listing their employment supervisor, which then is like, okay, who do we do licensure verification on? And what does that look like? And so one of the, I think it was a couple of meetings ago, we were looking at an application in which the supervisor was subcontracted. And so on the application, they listed the non-licensed supervisor that they had in the school, but the actual form was a contracted licensed supervisor. And so there was a discrepancy between that section of the application and then the actual verified supervision experience. And so I had proposed that that perhaps we start to kind of reevaluate if that part of the application is actually even meeting what we had intended it to do, or if it needs more clarification, but then to also start to look at these different roles of the responsible supervisor or the different roles of all the supervisors. And one of the other things that has come to kind of mind as it pertains to this, and channeling my inner Dr. Davey, you know, we've had some concerns with the form for quite some time now that says someone who's knowledgeable about your experience can sign this form. Well, that differs from what the BACB accepts. The BACB expects that you identify who that responsible person is at the onset of the relationship. Ours kind of has this difference of, well, if they're knowledgeable about it, then they can sign. So it doesn't have that same responsibility. And so I wanted to kind of start this conversation, see what direction, if any, we need to go. And I do believe that we also asked for input from Ms. Galvin as well to see if if this was even anything that we needed to target, but I feel like as the BACB evolves, they're semi starting to resolve some of the concerns that we have had with our application process. And how do we start to mirror that in such a way that we're not, you know, still having some vagueness in the definitions of supervisors?
And Mr. Chair, I can now hear myself think. So I apologize for that cacophony in my environment. But what I think that we need to focus on to help Ms. Galvin provide you with advice is to consider whether your statute ARS 3220.91.03 subsection B really states that the standards that for supervised experience must be consistent with those of the BACB. So by virtue of the BACB establishing the standards specific to these different supervisory roles, is that alone adequate to authorize this board to the committee and the board to collect this additional information? So in other words, how do we, can we interpret or construe that subsection of 2091.03 to encompass that? Ms. Galvin, does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand the question and your reference to statute. So I'd have to take a look to see if that's sufficient authority upon which you could require the request for additional information with respect to the roles of supervisor.
And then, Mr. Chair, I think the related question would be, do we need to promulgate any rule changes? I think when we first sort of started to explore this conversation, there was some speculation that maybe we need to define these terms, perhaps in board rule. So your statute does, R426-401 definition statute does define supervised experience, but I did not find anywhere in rule or statute defining supervisor. And do we need to be so specific and granular that we would need to define all these supervisors and their roles? I hope not, but we need to evaluate that.
It seems the statute is written in such a way that we adopt what the BACB has on its books currently. I'm not sure that there's a need to revise statute or add to statute. Since that is the guideline, but you know, obviously that's a legal question, but that's where I would stand on it.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I think, and I agree with you. I think if we capture it under the statute and Jean's able to identify that I think would be fine. I think the concern that I have is to what degree, if we do have a consensus that if it meets the standards of the BACB, to what degree do we then have an obligation in the application to identify the responsible supervisor, which is, again, set to be at the onset of the relationship? That's very different than the way that we accept the proof of supervision right now. And are we obligated to monitor for that first year consulting supervisor? So when we have somebody who is newly licensed, you know, they passed their exam in May, they got licensed in August, and now, you know, they're supervising, and come, you know, August of next year, we have an applicant before us whose supervisor was within the first year. To what degree does that overarching piece require us then to ensure that a consulting supervisor was retained and adequately used?
And Mr. Chair, I recall it was Dr. Davey who first raised this question and directed me to follow up with the BACB relative to how they were going to ascertain compliance with the consulting supervisor requirement, and their response was through an audit. So the BACB isn't monitoring it any closer than, you know, some spot checking after the fact. And so we would ostensibly only find out some information that someone was not in compliance. We wouldn't know that until well after I'm sure you'd even made a licensure decision in most or possibly all cases.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Pacanon, to that point, I think that's the concern. I guess I would just want from Ms. Galvin to understand if that does apply, if the statute applies that you must meet the BACB standards, then as I would assume, then we need to be defining in the application who's the responsible supervisor and monitoring for those consulting supervisors. Because the concern that I would have is, again, to Ms. Pacanon's point, 2 years down the road, somebody is audited, they do, you know, an audit on other things, and then come to us and someone's got a practice that they're running. And now we have to be like, oh, sorry, you didn't meet the standards. And I think that we in the protection of the public have a little bit of a different responsibility to, like, I don't think auditing is the same as, you know, verification. And I'm concerned that the BACB, I understand their reasoning, I understand their manpower issues, I get all of that. But my concern would be, you know, we've had licensure across, you know, the large majority of the U.S. now for several years, and we still have people that say, what's licensure? And so now I can't trust that, even though the BACB is like, you must have a consulting supervisor, I can't trust that every professional is following that, reading that. And I get that that's their obligation. But then how do we enforce that if that's been deemed something that is to protect the public? It's to make sure that people aren't just supervising without supports. How do we make sure that those things are in place if that statute would apply to, hey, these are the standards and therefore we need to be making sure that they meet the standards?
Yeah, I mean, this is getting close, Dr. Davis Wilson, Mr. Chair, Dr. Davis Wilson, this is getting us closer to kind of, and again, the BACB has kind of said as such that they're getting closer and closer to like professions and how they're approaching our experience as behavior analysts and then become certified, right? And so you're almost getting us to this point of where, you know, it's not unthinkable of where we might have a program of study provided to us almost, you know, prior to, like, or at the onset or prior to the onset of someone beginning their experience, right? Just like our friends on the psychologist board do, and our friends that are licensed by the same board under a license to practice psychology, where it's like, here's the package of what I'm going to do. Like, it's presented at first, and like, this is, you know, and then they have to update it if supervisors are changed, or updated if, you know, they switch placements, whatever those things are. You know, I don't even think I fully understand them all, as I don't spend a lot of time on the application committee there. But you just wonder, some process that we could learn from the psychology board or from the psychologist, of how we might set up this long-term mechanism if this is truly the way we're going, of these supervisors and programs being outlined early on, like, not just thinking about fixing the problem today, but what's the problem we're going to be solving for long term, and maybe that can help board staff direct us of, like, hey, this worked really well for psychologists, but we would suggest, you know, X, Y, and Z for behavior analysts. I also don't know that we're in a position to really say, like, they already have their BCBA. They're essentially, that's the path into licensure in the state of Arizona. Are we going to ask them to then present all of that documentation? We're not going to really hold it up because we don't like the program of study, or we don't feel like that's appropriate. That's already essentially been decided at the BACB level. And so, you know, I get us to this point of where, you know, we don't want to give up our responsibility to the public of making sure that an individual is qualified to practice behavior analysis in the state. But I do boil it down to, the entry to us is, you are board certified in good standing, and you have obtained your supervision by someone who is licensed in whatever state you might have been doing that in, or if you're in Arizona, by a licensed behavior analyst. And that is essentially the path in. And in some ways, it's like, does that mean that we don't care about, I mean, I don't say we don't care, but is that really then say that this beginning piece of these consulting supervisors and all these other things, are those just red herrings that they're so far removed from when we see them? How would we ever stop the train at that particular point? We'd say, like, you didn't list that supervisor, you didn't follow that rule, therefore we're not going to license you. And to your point, if it's 3 months, 3 years after the fact, we're not going to pull a license for something like that. I can't imagine, unless it was fraud and they're lying and the BACB's come back and they're going to yank their certification over it. So I don't know that there's a, being the one that has brought this up on a couple of occasions, like, I'm just fearful that we don't necessarily have the mechanism to do some of this. And then when we start doing it, what's the consequence for it? So.
Mr. Chair, one possible solution, I'm not saying it's a palatable one, this board could make a policy decision and enact it in statute and rule that a supervisor, not only that they be licensed in the jurisdiction in which, you know, if licensure is required, but also that they cannot provide supervision in their initial year of certification. And so you just do an end run around that whole requirement. I'm not sure that's a good decision. I just throw it out there because it would be something that would circumvent this problem.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, I agree. I think the first question for me then is to what degree, because that statute just broadly says we will accept the BACB standards, to what degree do we have an obligation to do something? And if we do have an obligation to do something, is that what we propose and rule? Is we have like an exclusion to the consulting supervisor or an exclusion? Because that's that, as I read that particular statute and how we have things outlined, it says we're going to default to the BACB. Well, the BACB has spoken and they say 1 year consulting supervision and again, this responsible supervisor piece. And to what, so I guess my question still lingers of to what degree are we obligated to? And then I think part two of that is, if we are obligated to, do we do rule writing to address your concerns of kind of manpower and what does that look like? And are there some exclusions or exceptions that we need to have in rule, or do we find a way to monitor it? So I agree with you. I'm not sure the solution should be that we're monitoring for the 1 year of consulting supervisor necessarily. However, if it is interpreted that we are defaulting to the BACB, I do feel that we have an obligation to monitor for it unless we specify otherwise. And that's kind of where my concern is. So I agree with you. I'm not necessarily totally set on how do we monitor it and then what happens. You know, then we've got to figure out, like, okay, it was 2022 and now someone's licensed in 2027. Do we go all the way back and they're relocating to Arizona? Well, then you know, possibly by then do universal recognition, but how do we address all of those pieces and still make sure that we're meeting our obligation under that statute? Or does that statute, and this was one of the things that when we broadened the statute to align with the BACB, this was one of the things that was cautioned by our psychologist peers. You know, I remember Dr. Olby talking about it, of what happens when there's a discrepancy that now comes to question those roles. And I think that's where we're at. I agree with you. I don't think that there's an easy solution for monitoring consulting supervision. However, I think we wrote the statute so broad that now we may have an obligation to do so.
Without knowing, what does the documentation provided to the BACB look like if you do have a supervisor who's supervising somebody who has been a supervisor less than a year or has had their certification less than a year?
It does look like on the consulting supervisor requirements for new BCBA supervising field work, there was a document that was sent out by the BACB in May of 2021 that shows an example of the consulting supervision documentation that's on there. You know, as I've been digging through this. I'm not sure that it says it has to be submitted, but presumably that would be that audit requirement. This is what you would be expected to have. It notes on there the name of the new BCBA, the new supervisor certification number, the date they were certified, the month and year of fieldwork hours provided by the new supervisor, and then the consulting supervisor in the same information.
So really it's one step beneath the final verification form that you turn in. It's documentation that you have to maintain for X years. You may not turn it in because of the it may not be requested. So that documentation would be in hand, or technically should be in hand, for a minimum of 7 years. So could, like the final verification form that we accept, that is to be submitted by to the BACB, could that documentation be requested? And there's not a doubling or an extra requirement. It's simply something that they should already possess, that we could review it. Then we're not looking at auditing process. We are each person essentially, but using that documentation for that evidence. And maybe it's not substantial enough either. I don't know.
Mr. Chair, I think to that point, I think it would, again, part one is to, you know, hear from Jean on whether or not we need to be doing something with this consulting supervision standard. But if we do, I think that aligns with everything else that we talk to. And then we have rules that say we can request additional information. So if we have reason to believe that what they're providing is not truthful, or it's it's missing, it has some sort of delinquent information, we would be able to say like, no, can you send us additional documentation? So I think I think that would be a great idea. I think the challenge that perhaps Dr. Davey was getting at, though, is what is the cutoff to that? Is it that, you know, that Ms. Malice, when she does, you know, when we get the supervisor, proof of supervisor eligibility, do we also at that point say, oh, well, you had only during the time of this individual supervision, you were a first year supervisor, therefore you must also submit this form? Because it would be easy this year to do, right? Because this is a new standard. So it would be easy to say everybody in 2023, you know, who was newly certified in 2022 would presumably have a consulting supervisor. But 5 years from now, you would have to look at when their supervision occurred and whether or not that person was within their first year. And I think that's the kind of redundancy, headache, you know, potential problem that you know, could come from kind of monitoring that to that level. And I think that's where it would be challenging, is figuring out, okay, well, their supervision was 2022 to 2023, therefore, and their supervisor was certified in 2021, therefore this documentation should exist, so then we request it. And that just adds extra burden to board staff to have to figure out who that applies to and who it doesn't. So I think the documentation you're suggesting is sufficient enough. I think it's how do we know when and who it applies to, and pulling it and making that easy, I think, is more of kind of Dr. Davies' point. Well, I'm putting words in Dr. Davies' mouth. I apologize, but
maybe I'm looking at too simplistic, but wouldn't the certification date just indicate that? So if it was prior to whatever it is, that there would be, or post the date, then there'd be a requirement. If it was before that date, there would be no requirement to display that information. They wouldn't have it. They don't need it.
I'm thinking about like on the application, just where we have listed there, like January of 2015, right? Was it before or was it after those 270 hours? Perhaps that could be the screener.
Yeah. And the other is that we have the certification, the certificate number indicates the year anyway.
But that's,
I mean, just looking at that,
they were certified. That's not the year the supervisor was certified. That would be the piece that we'd have to look at is, yes, you were certified in 2022 when this standard was there. But if Dr. Rates was your supervisor, then that wouldn't have mattered. But if someone newly licensed was your supervisor, so it, there would have to be that connecting of both of those pieces.
Mr. Chair, we're unfortunately at a little bit of a deficit here because we're still building the application, the initial application online. We are close. We know that the system has the ability to accommodate custom forms. We have to outline what the requirements would be for those custom forms. So can we design a foolproof form that captures this information? I'm not saying it's impossible. I can't conceive of it in my mind quite yet. We could try to draft a prototype and see if it achieves the goal that we are all trying to, work toward. This is just going to be a process.
So, Mr. Chair, Ms. Galvin, I think maybe perhaps the first step is to just figure out to what degree we under our current statutes have to do verifications and follow the responsible supervisor standards and the consulting supervisor standards, and then go from there. Because if we can figure it, like, I like the responsible supervisor one because, we've had multiple occurrences of like, why is this person signing your supervision form? They weren't even there. They weren't even present. They didn't work there. They worked there. They're your friend. Like we can't quite figure that one out. So the responsible supervisor language that the BACB has, again, is very clear and I think would remediate these ongoing concerns that we've had there. I could still see like what happens when, like, to Dr. Davies' point, when they move agencies or that supervisor changes, then do they have to have a form from each site and what does that look like? But I think that all of it really just comes down to the original question of to what degree, now that the BACB has kind of defined those two things and set them in the standards, to what degree under our statute are we required to also make sure that we're meeting those standards? And then if we are, then come back to the table of how do we try to do it?
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, just said a different way, if we are asked, why are you requiring all this additional information? Why do I have to fill out this form? Why are you posing these questions to us? Can we say, well, 3220.91.03b lets us ask whatever we want as long as it relates to the BACB standard. So anything they require, we get to ask for. Is it that simple?
I would think so.
One more point. We gain all that information. I mean, we could probably randomly select one of the applicants that we have today, and we know exactly when that supervisor was certified. We're getting that data right now anyway. We're not asking for anything extra. I would say we could pass it off onto the applicant of highlighting it, and then the system moves to that direction. Like, okay, well, you provide this information. I mean, that could be programmed into the form, but so far we have that information right now, except we don't have that form that the BACB is requiring for auditing purposes. But if you hit a certain date on a supervisor, then it triggers, okay, upload these forms. There we go. We're done. We don't have to do anything.
Mr. Chair, it sounds like you are inviting yourself to our requirements gathering meeting where we sit down with the developers and figure this out. But I
talked to Dr. Davey before this and it was all his ideas, so maybe make him go.
Okay.
First off, that would be illegal if you talked to me before this, so I don't think you did that. But second, I would just like to make
I did not do that. Motion. Again, another retraction.
Yes, so. Thank you very much for clarifying.
But I would second the motion that Ms. Backman just made that Dr. Stenhoff attend that meeting. So moved. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Davey. I appreciate that.
We'll figure it out. But what I'm suggesting is that, you know, we invite expertise to help inform us just to make sure we're passing those requirements on effectively to the development team. That being said, one way we could accommodate this information is, you know, if we design a form that we know effectively captures what we want, it can be as simple as there's a section in the application, download this form, complete it, attach what we need, and upload it. So it may not even require much at all in the way of system development and programming. So I think we just need to design the form.
And Ms. Packon, for the record, I'd be very happy to help out on that too. So.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion on this item?
So, Mr. Chair, we'll bring this back to, I don't know that we'll be able to put it on the November or the Halloween, October 31 agenda. We had pledged to keep that agenda just for applications. So the following agenda will be ready.
Okay, great. All right. So if no further discussion on that, let's move on to 12, action regarding the titles used by behavior analysts. Ms. Packon, your lead on that one.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Where is my report? Hold on. Suddenly my report is gone. Hold on. I don't know where it went. Do you see a memorandum in your folder? Oh. I just see
it. It looks like several items are no longer in the drive.
Oh, well, that is super curious.
The last one I see is 8.A6 item. It ends there.
I only see through number 7. Well, I have local copies saved. Does anyone need that material from me? Or did you download it previously?
It's showing up for me.
How strange.
Same.
I just hit refresh and now I'm down to the 7s now. Like I'm just back on.
Files are disappearing. I don't know how to explain this. I'm looking for my local file.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dr. Stenhoff. I only see to the 7s when I refreshed as well.
And we still need to go back to the BACB discussion too, which will be super quick. Okay, so
Ms. Packanon, I'm able to get your memorandum and download it. Would you like me to email it to you?
Because I can't even find it locally. Hold on, I think my staff is texting me. I just don't even know what's going on. Oh, I think, sorry, files are being moved around. Look in the board. Okay, got it. It's just been moved. I'll get there. Now I know where it went. Except the folders aren't opening for me. Can we talk about the BACB update? Because I don't need to look at the memorandum for that one.
Let's do it.
There were two updates that the BACB provided. One was a summary of some actions that were taken against an individual who is an imposter BCBA. And so, you know, I think that was the CBA would want jurisdictions, licensing boards to be aware of this too, in the event, you know, that person attempts to seek licensure in one of those states. I think that we can all appreciate that because of how Arizona has outlined its requirements for licensure, that would be pretty implausible for a person to be able to successfully achieve licensure with fraudulent documentation. But I think we can appreciate and respect the actions that the BACB has taken in this instance. And there are others that are documented on the BACB's website. I do think that what we should do as a staff is just double check. It's not a super long list, but when we receive an application, check to see if maybe that person's name appears on the imposter list. And if they do, that would be, compel us to take some pause. Of course, there are some individuals who have some creative variations of their name or multiple names, so that would make it a little bit challenging. But I think that's one more due diligence piece that we should probably start doing going forward. Any questions about that?
Ms. Packman, don't we kind of short circuit that though with just the certification check? Like when you pull whether or not they're currently certified, that would tell us right then and there if the BACB has any issues with them, right?
Correct. Correct. Yes.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, Ms. Packanon, that particular individual was actually using the identity of somebody else. And so that particular issue, several sources had actually verified her certification, but she was using the identity of somebody else. So like part of her prosecution, like she was just prosecuted and stuff in the state she was in, part of that was that she was using the name of a different behavior analyst as kind of her entire professional profile to be able to access an MPI. Like even the MPI and everything used the identity of somebody else. So it wasn't just the misrepresentation, but it was also a identity theft case.
Yeah. So if there's no further questions or discussions about that piece, the second update related to Jean, cover your ears. Dr. Davey had mentioned at the conclusion of last month's meeting that we would be seeing some information coming from the BACB. There are concerns that are increasingly being expressed about agencies that are imposing on its BCBAs certain policies that or actions directed to take actions that are in violation of maybe the code of ethics, where licensure is required, possibly in violations of statutes or rules. And that really becomes an issue when an agency closes down and sort of leaves its clients without services. So really what this what the BACB wants to impart on regulators is that their limited scope as it relates to regulating these matters, taking actions, and enforcing, disciplining, and so forth, individuals who are not certified by the organization. And the corollary is true too for us as a board. We simply don't have any authority or jurisdiction over agencies, business entities. We only have authority over the individuals who are licensed to practice in those organizations. So as I had indicated, this is not unique to this profession. It's an issue that plagues many others, unless and until an entity such as the Arizona Department of Health Services were to require, registration, licensures, or some sort of enforcement requirements on agencies where behavior analytic services were delivered. We really don't have much in the way of authority or recourse for decisions that were made by individuals who are not licensed by us. So hopefully that summary makes sense.
Comments or questions about that? Okay. All right. And then do, let's see where we're at.
I found the elusive memo for 12. I think it was item number 12, title protection. So this is coming back before you at your request. I know that you wanted to have some conversation around the use of titles or credentials or indicators for individuals who are not currently licensed but may have acquired those or earned those credentials at one point in the past. I did provide a couple of statutes that I think will help inform your decision, 3220.91, where we define behavior and analyst, and then also your statute 3220.91.12, particularly subsection C that states it's a misdemeanor for someone who isn't licensed to use any combination of words, initials, and symbols that leads the public to believe that person is licensed as a behavior analyst in Arizona, to which I wonder, what would that be exactly? So is BCBA one of those initials or that would cause some confusion or lead someone to believe they are licensed? LBA, I think it is more clear, but I think this subsection carries too much. It's so vague. It's quite ambiguous. So I'm interested to hear though what the committee thinks.
Yes, we all start at once.
Mr. Chair, for me, I think one of the challenges for me, and I try to think of, and I think Dr. Dave and I kind of talked about this last time as well, is that I think the credential itself is not as problematic as calling yourself a behavior analyst, right? But the problem is that the credential says behavior analyst. And so you can have the BCBA as kind of the credential, but then you have the, the general public is going to see that as behavior analyst. It is a little bit different than like you have a PhD. The general public doesn't then assume you're a psychologist. And so I think that's where this gets a little bit like sticky, is that even if we said like, well, you know, BCBA itself doesn't necessarily say behavior analyst, therefore, but oftentimes what you'll see then is like, they'll have the initials and, but then they'll identify themselves as a board certified behavior analyst. Or when someone asks, what is a BCBA? What is someone going to say? I think it makes it a little bit sticky.
Well, in the ASD industry, parents are looking for a BCBA, right? Oh, we need a BCBA to oversee this. I've got to get a BCBA. I mean, it's just part of the conversation always. And so, and Dr. Davis Wilson, that's exactly, it's sticky because, you can be a BCBA without being licensed, but I'm looking for a BCBA, but there's no insurance that individual is in fact licensed in the state. So it's muddied really quick.
And right? Mr. Chair, if I may share an anecdote to that point, we have for a year and a half, right, been accepting applications for temporary emergency licensure. And the intent, as we communicate it to applicants, is it's intended to permit someone who is in another jurisdiction to practice into Arizona in order to ensure service delivery, sustaining service delivery, no interruption in services while individuals are separated due to the pandemic. We did have an applicant who is certified. She's a BCBA. She resides in a remote part of the state. And when we looked at her credentials, she is not licensed in Arizona. So it made us wonder as staff how many BCBAs are working, existing, doing things in our state that have been certified for some period of time, but never sought licensure. And might they be practicing in violation of your statutes?
We had an applicant today that very thing happened. Substantially happened.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the other challenge too, though, right, Mr. Chair, is that you can practice as a BCBA in the state under the supervision of somebody else. But then how does that translate to, but then what do you call yourself? Because the statute still says, but then you can't call yourself a behavior analyst, right? So how does that work? Because you can, it's independent practice that's the concern. But if you work for an agency and you're still getting supervised, you can be a BCBA getting supervised. But how is that remediated?
I don't know. I always try to look for, are there like situations, right? I mean, are there other places we can look at how those clarifications are being made? We're not the only state that has a practice and a title act in place. Psychologists have, you know, people that have PsyDs that are also not licensed. There's educational psychologists that are, you know, not licensed. There's all of these variations, perhaps even on that side of our house. But, you know, do we have any guidance anywhere, Ms. Galvin, from any of those other sources that can help us in, you know, do we have to, you know, I think I said this last time, do we have to come up with some way of like, somebody wants to put their BCBA, but parenthetically we require them to put not licensed, you know, it's like, what, it seems like that becomes this huge, you know, witch hunt of finding people who screwed that up and didn't do it, or is it, you know, or do we only care when it comes to us? You know, do we put something that they're not eligible to supervise because they're in a school? Like, I just don't, there's got to be some example somewhere, right, of where another field has a similar issue. And I don't know if it's like, even in medicine, right, you can be board certified in something, but if you're not licensed in the state, you know, it may not be the same thing. And yeah. So I've been trying to wrap my head around, like, what are some other places we could look for that? Like, what if you're an attorney, right? But you pass the bar in Arizona, you know, but then you move to New Mexico. I mean, you're still an attorney, but you haven't passed the bar in New Mexico. So how does that work for that profession?
So you can use the initials JD, but not represent yourself as an attorney at law. We discussed in the pre-meeting some examples with MDs and DOs that their statute prohibits the use of those initials in such a way to convey to the public that you are licensed in the state to practice medicine. So I think that there are some examples that we could look to guide us. You know, the issue is there's, you know, you guys have the National Certification Board. So there's a couple of wrinkles that would probably require us to look at various examples or hypotheticals, how people could use, you know, the national certification versus state licensure, and how that could come up with different scenarios that we would have to address. But There are other sources we could look to. I know just right off DO and MDs.
And Mr. Chair, the example that I've provided too, which is taking it a step further, there are the Model Practice Act for physical therapy requires that if you are licensed as a physical therapist or assistant, you must use the immediately following your name, the initials PT or PTA. You then can follow that with any other credentials, academic degrees, anything else in any sequence that you want to follow PT or PTA, you are welcome to do that. But for the benefit of the public, you must use comma PT or comma PTA. And that is what is most important, is that the public understands you are, that means that you are licensed. This would be easier, much easier for you to make this type of a decision if there was a universally agreed upon set of letters, an acronym, whatever, that your profession has landed on that is the designation that is widely accepted or universally accepted jurisdiction to jurisdiction to jurisdiction. I don't know that you have that. We could suggest LBA. That kind of makes sense. But has this profession landed on LBA, licensed behavior analysts, as the universal term?
Nope.
Mr. Chair, you know, one of the things that we did with the access plan back in what was that, Dr. Davey, 2016. So before we were on this board and we were advising access, with the access policy, we did differentiate in the access policy that a non-licensed BCBA still had to identify themselves as a behavior analysis trainee, and they had to use a modifier that indicated to the health plan that they were non-licensed and practicing under the supervision of somebody that was licensed. And that was, that was done at the health plan policy. So that if somebody was for, you know, a variety of reasons practicing under somebody else's supervision, whether they were a non-licensed BCBA, a BCABA, or a supervisee working towards certification, we kind of defined it all as the same thing, a behavior analysis trainee, and you must bill modifiers that indicate these sorts of things. And one of the things that I have noticed in that, like, I think it's, and I'm sure in an audit, a health plan is going to catch it the same way, but I'm not sure that families are understanding that behavior analysis trainee has an overarching supervisor that's responsible for the programs. What we're seeing is that these behavior analysis trainees are basically getting their own caseloads operating, you know, without you can ask a family, oh, who's your BCBA? And they'll give you the name of a student and you're like, oh, but that's not your BCBA. And so even, you know, with, I don't know if anybody from the association is still on, but, you know, educating around like the idea that you can build these modifiers doesn't mean that they can practice independently. The idea of these modifiers is to provide access to care when we know that we're short-handed and we need that tiered service. But your informed consent, your policy documents should all make it very clear to families of, I am the licensed supervisor. I am the one over this whole program. But unfortunately, that's, you know, not even how that's even translated, despite our best efforts at the policy level to try to clearly define that. I don't know that the general public is understanding the difference between a trainee and who is responsible for license for the actual provision of services.
So no one's here today.
Any Any other comments on that or suggestions on what we might want to do?
Mr. Chair, I've been sort of sitting here thinking about maybe there is an opportunity to schedule, let's say in early 2023, another stakeholder meeting where we bring back some of these issues that you have been discussing and give that the groups and individuals a chance to weigh in and comment on some of them. Maybe it's time.
Yeah, I think that would be good.
And in doing so, we're complying with 3220.91.15.
I think the interesting piece might be, you know what, at those stakeholder meetings, we have other BCBAs, right? We've got people who are licensed. Could there be like a public outreach? I mean, obviously, these are our public meetings, but we're talking about, you know, how does the public differentiate between a BCBA and an LBA? And do they even know the difference between credentialed and licensed? And we're making assumptions, we're just guessing, but could there be a public outreach to have, you know, not just professionals on the meeting? I don't know what that outreach program might look like.
I think it's a great idea. I don't know how to craft it either, but I can say that as a parent in the community, it's very evident that these aren't just assumptions. The families and it's even around those that are even starting new practices out here. And they're like, hey, so, you know, we're opening up a clinic in Arizona tomorrow. Like, what do we need to know? And you can follow these people saying like, well, you have to get licensed in what? What does that mean? And you're just like, so I think hearing from the public is a great idea. I think if there was a way that we could include them, I think it's a great idea. But I would definitely say that there's a consensus amongst many of the parent groups and many that they don't understand. And again, I think having the professional association, because there's agencies that are providing, I don't know who the agency is, but I had a biller that was like, oh, this agency has X number of ABA clients. And I'm like, oh, you must be mistaken because they have one BCBA. Like, that's not humanly possible. And so my assumption, I quit asking questions. I didn't want any knowledge of it, but my assumption is they've got a bunch of trainees that are out providing all these services and there's no connection between those two. So I think there's a ton of available evidence to say that these things are happening. But I agree, like if there was a way to either work with the stakeholders on educating, you know, they have a unique model. AZIAB has a unique model of agency sponsorship. And so maybe educating at the agency level, maybe doing some CE or some additional events for like C-suite level agencies or something to like hit it up at that level. Yes, I think it's on the BCBA to recognize like you don't see a problem with the fact that you have 8 supervisees who each have 12 kids, which makes all of those kids your responsibility. Maybe hitting it at that side. And perhaps in doing that, we do start to tap into non-licensed professionals because oftentimes these agency owners are not in this field or they're doing speech and OT and they wanted to add a business line of ABA or something. I don't know if that would help. But I agree. I think if we do stakeholders, it's going to be all licensed folks.
But I don't think, Mr. Chair, Dr. Ingersoll, that may not be horrible, right? I mean, you think about if we do also kind of like a CEU event through the board or through Asiaba to something like pushing this through the licensees to be on the lookout for these things and to be, you know, able to educate people around these things and to provide some information around that. You know, part of it is, you know, it's a game of, you know, when people talk to each other, when BCBAs talk to LBAs or however it might go down, of like somebody raising the question to them of like, oh, you know, I was just at a training and heard about this, or, you know, hey, you know, I saw in your auto signature, you had that. I do think we could leverage our licensee pool to not to help regulate, but to at least educate around those things, right? I mean, so that may be even a first step, is to make sure that our own licensees understand the fact that it's a, you know, a Title I Practice Act and what that actually means for our BCBAs in the state as well as the LBAs.
And Mr. Chair, we almost dropped a thought. I think something that I think Dr. Davey was suggesting that we do, we have our student intern who is poised to do research for us. Do we want her to look at the 30-some practice acts and identify the language specific to use of titles and title protection to kind of inform you a little bit?
Yeah,
I think that'd be good.
I think so.
Well, and not to, you know, throw the other kink in there, but I think that part of this still goes back to how our statute currently defines behavior analysis, and that kind of weird road of, we talk so much about the autism services, but these sorts of things are existing in other practices of behavior analysis, where people are like, yeah, I'm a BCBA and I'm, you know, well-known BCBA, but I'm doing business consulting. And it's like, well, are you like not doing behavior analytic, like business consulting entirely? Like you're, you know, using some sort of education and experience, or are people retaining you because they know you're a behavior analyst and they know that, you know, whether it's behavioral systems change, or you're helping them, you know, develop out their clinical standards, or what all of that looks like, is that not still potentially under our statute practicing as a behavior analyst? Because we don't have OBM exclusions. We don't have, like, the psychologists have the education exclusion, which we have. But I would still argue that it's still, in my opinion, misinterpreted, because it clearly says otherwise certified by the Department of Education. So just because you're a BCBA working in the school doesn't make you exempt from licensure. If you are a BCBA that is certified as a school teacher or a school psychologist, then yeah, then you would be exempt from licensure under the verbiage of that language. But, you know, we don't have, in psychology, the industry and organizational psych folks have an exclusion. We don't have any of that. So, you know, we're defaulting kind of to the autism care, because that's where we're so often at. But I think that whatever decisions, stakeholders, you know, things that we do, has to take us back to that conversation when we had, you know, Manny and others come in and talk to us about OBM and other things. Because I can tell you that I am a business consultant. My practice of behavior analysis doesn't turn off. And I still, in the realm of behavioral systems change, follow my ethics codes, you know, take data, conduct assessments, monitor towards progress. I'm still designing, implementing, and monitoring in my capacity as a behavior analyst. I can't just say like, well, I'm just not going to call myself a BCBA. And all of that goes away. Well, I guess I'm still practicing behavior analysis. And then by the nature of being a BCBA, that just doesn't turn off. And so I think it's sticky, because in other states, those lines of business are clearly defined in the statute, whether it's that, hey, we regulate all of it, or we have exclusions to OBM, or we have exclusions to these things. We don't have that defined. And I don't think we landed on anything when this came up last year. I wonder, don't we have behavior analysis trainee defined in statute? I mean, could we broaden that definition to include the way that we did it in Access? I think we've got it as just like...
But are they really a trainee?
Well, if you're under the supervision of somebody else, like I wouldn't just say like bill under my number without supervision, training, monitoring. And that's just it, is the way that they're billing, you're billing under someone else's MPI. So that person, that MPI you're billing under has obligations to ensure that you've delegated out the work with proper supervision and training.
Yeah. I just, you know, trainee, I mean, it's really you're supervising them. Maybe it's semantics because they could be, you know, registered behavior tech that's just under supervision. It's not really, it's not ongoing training per se, but maybe it's more
semantics. I need to interrupt really quick. We're slightly past time for another code word. Ms. Malice, would you please provide us with our next code word?
I sure will. The next code word is boogie. B-O-O-G-I-E, boogie. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Malice.
Well, Dr. Davey, oh, sorry, Mr. Chair.
Like, I've got the boogie. I've got a boogie.
Here you go. Dr. Davey, to that point, I mean, maybe it's not that we lump it into that same, but maybe there's verbiage in the exclusions that we could capture the BCBA's practicing under the direct supervision of an LBA.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's just not clear enough in the exclusions. And it happens for a variety of reasons. It's not, I mean, sometimes it's that they're not, you know, sure if they want to get licensed or not. Sometimes it's military families where they know in 6 months they're going to be leaving. Sometimes it's, you know, California just passed a, you know, their new bill that requires funders to credential healthcare or mental health practitioners within 60 days. We don't have that here. It can take 6, 9, 12 months. So you so these organizations have wait lists and kids and families and people in need of services. And they've got these behavior analysts that are pending credentialing. And so being able to have where the funders allow, like Access, being able to have that person with proper modifiers, proper supervision, be able to expand those services there, bring great value to our community. So I'm wondering if maybe that's where, maybe it's finding really clean language under the exemptions. And I don't know to what authority then we could also define or somewhat prescribe, I know it's calibrated, but prescribe a little bit more of the supervision. Because right now, the supervision of a non-licensed BCBA is quite vague. And I think for me, it's simple. You're billing under my license, so supervision needs to be at the level at which the individual who is receiving services is protected, right? And that should be calibrated. For some folks, that's a higher number than for others. But by not having a number at all, I think you get a bunch of really good rule followers that say, oh, there's no number, so we're going to do this 5% because that is the only referenceable number in the standard, right? So they keep that. And then you get the others that are like, oh, well, there's no number, so we'll supervise them when we get around to it. And perhaps that would be the language, is perhaps to define you can be a BCBA practicing under the direct supervision as defined by X, Y, and a minimum of X, Y, and Z. So you still have that calibration, but we still have that safeguard of a licensed BCBA. And maybe that would capture, I don't think it would capture the outliers of folks that, you know, are calling themselves BCBAs outside of that context, but I think those are the distinctions that we would want to make anyway. And again, I still think in the school system, calling yourself a BCBA when you're not otherwise certified by the Department of Education is also a violation of the statute. So, Mr. Chair, Ms. Pacnon, I mean, perhaps that is that first step is the stakeholders. And then perhaps to, you know, Ms. Denton's point, perhaps we can encourage the stakeholders to consider including some of their C-level suite representatives within their organizations to participate. You know, to expand a little bit of that feedback. I don't think it'll happen. I think all those agencies will just send a BCBA. Like, I don't think they're going to be like, oh, cool, I, CEO of this company, you know, I'm going to come in and do that. I think they'll be like, eh, nope, this sounds like you, clinical director, your job. So that might also muddy some of it. But it might also serve as education for those clinical directors that are, you know, kind of, you know, not advocating for the proper use of that. But I think the next step is to get that stakeholder feedback and see if we can land on something. Like I said, I think one possible avenue is to clearly define that exemption. But I also think we need to, at that same point, define behavior analysts outside of autism treatment too, you know, to make sure we capture all of that.
So I guess next steps then would be just to set up that time with the stakeholders, right?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I suggested early in 2023 because, you know, we know that October is a difficult month, and then we're shifting into holiday season. We want to make sure, of course, that, you know, we allow plenty of time for you to focus on your primary responsibilities as committee members. So maybe in early 2023, we can just sort of, you know, look for a time that, you know, works for the AZ ABBA leaders, and that also allows them several months to organize what they want that participation to look like.
Yeah, that works.
And I would also suggest that, you know, the topic, when we present the topic to the stakeholders, for, you know, whether it's agencies or whether it's a professional association or whomever, that we ask them to come prepared with like a statement or some thoughts around it, not just kind of a stream of consciousness of like, hey, here's the agenda item, you know, let's now like open this up, right? Let's pose some questions to them that say, how do you think how should we address X? How do we address Y? When X and Y are not perfect, what are some other thoughts there? Like maybe it's more of a questionnaire that's sent out or a survey that then they come and discuss what their responses were. Otherwise, I think we get into some, you know, kind of like ourselves here, like we're not allowed to talk about this before the meetings, right? So we have to talk about it here in almost stream of consciousness and like what we've jotted down before the meeting. They're not under those same stipulations. They could come very prepared to have a conversation with us, which we could then, take forward.
I like that idea a lot. I think that would be very helpful.
And perhaps referencing this, like this conversation or others that we've had and saying like, go back, listen to this, listen to, so that I agree. I think the more prepared they are, the better.
And I would guess, Ms. Godwin, that's permissible, correct? Like if we're going to reach out, we can give direction of what we want to hear about or pose questions, right?
Yeah, I would imagine there'll be some, you know, pre-meeting communication to stakeholders, and then that communication staff could, you know, highlight what it is the board would want to hear, the topics they want to hear.
And Mr. Chair, who wants to take the lead on a questionnaire or the bullet points of, you know, these topics and issues?
Can we not do it just kind of as a group, maybe Dr. Davis Wilson and myself, or I mean, I don't mean the volunteer, but I think, you know, we've been the most animated around it. If it makes sense to kind of grab our, and then it could come back to this group. We have plenty of time to then bring it back to this committee to react upon.
Perhaps an agenda item for one of the future meetings of the committee could be to discuss what bullet points would want to be communicated.
So, Mr. Chair, I will put that on the November meeting agenda. That is, or wait, I think is it an early December? Maybe an early December. Yes, December 2nd.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so there's one that it's a nice segue into number 13, other agenda items that we'd like to see for future meetings.
Now, earlier, Mr. Chair, we had discussed the reinstatement of Nadia Todd, and that there was that practice that occurred over 8 days without an active license, that we would come back at the next agenda or the next meeting to discuss possible action.
Okay. All right. So we can add that on there.
Diana, you said there was something you were going to add to future agenda.
Yeah, I'm still thinking about how to reframe it. With the original code set for ABA through access, when we had like H214K and like the, you know, back in like 2007 before all of the other T codes and all the other things come out, there was, and when DDD was working on the early childhood autism service specs prior to, or when licensure first happened and they were trying to figure out what all of that meant, there was correspondence between the licensure board, and I wasn't privy to what level, whether it was the board, whether it was representative and staff, but also the other state agencies. So there was correspondence between the board and access, correspondence between the board and DDD. I don't know what that looked like on the back end, but in going back to kind of the whole concerns that I have of like the telehealth registry and people practicing without that, but then people doing it right, but not having access to the intent of that. Is there any like interagency collaboration between the two state stakeholders that could occur as far as like access and the board around, or maybe because I guess the telehealth registry doesn't just apply to us. So to kind of bridge that, because I found that when we did that with the early childhood,
I'm afraid we're going off of into the topic instead of just asking staff to put it on the agenda.
Okay. So my question is just around, does that even need to be something that's on the agenda? So that's where I'm like, I mean, I guess we could now and just talk about it then. But
yeah,
I'd say put it on, because I don't know that the rest, at least I'd be able to answer your question until I have more detail. So maybe just add it for next time and then we can talk then.
Sounds great. And perhaps, I don't know if Heidi or anybody has any like history around what those interagency kind of conversations, collaborations looked like between, again, psychology board and the state health plan, or psychology board and DDD, but that might help too, because that's the piece that I'm not sure what it looked like.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I know I've seen some correspondence. Of course, the minutes would be the official record of, you know, what the discussion and what decisions may have precipitated from it. So I will do that research. What I'll ask of you, if you don't mind, is some language that you think represents what you want the agenda item to encompass. Of course, you know, we'll make sure that Ms. Galvin is satisfied with it as well. I think having the benefit of your perspective would help me make sure the agenda item is as effective as we want it to be.
All right. Okay, any other?
I have a 1 o'clock meeting, so
okay.
I apologize.
All right, thank you, Ms. Galvin.
Okay, take care.
Any other agenda items? Okay. All right. Let's move on to the next. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Discussion. All right. Well, thank you everybody for a record-breaking day, and I'll talk with you all soon.